All right, Scott Frost just wrapped up post-practice Thursday media availability. Javen Wright, who Javen yesterday tweeted out about his blood clot issue. Officially, his season is over. Javen got out of surgery. Things look good, fingers crossed. Prayers up for Javen and the entire Wright family. Frost also said today he has fingers crossed that Oliver Martin will be ready for Saturday night. Didn't sound super confident. Does like how the kickers have responded this week in practice, but has made no decision yet on who will punt and did not address who will be the place kicker. They also worked on Noyes, thinking that last week in Norman will help them with a night game in East Lansing. With all of that, let's welcome in from Hail Varsity, Jacob Padilla. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty well, Gary.
We're going to get to football, but I want to start with volleyball. Last night, Nebraska goes on the road in the Big Ten. They win against Northwestern. I think sometimes when Nebraska loses a set against teams that are not named, the Wisconsins, the Minnesotas, the upper echelon of the Big Ten, you go, oh my gosh, what's going on? But for the most part, Nebraska was pretty dominant in Evanston. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of the four-gamer, how do you think Lexi Sun's day, how would you describe Lexi Sun's day yesterday?
Yeah, certainly interesting. And I believe the team knew. We went to practice on Monday after the press conference, and Lexi wasn't practicing with the top side. So I kind of had the feeling that the lineup he used was the one that he was going to use. I wasn't there for the entire practice, but that was the last hour or so of practice. So I kind of got indication that was the way he was going. So I wasn't surprised, but I wondered if he might use her as a serving sub like he had been with her and Maddie Kubik when they weren't playing on the outside spots. But I don't think Lexi has been particularly successful in that role to this point. It was impressive, though, for her to come in off the bench like that and make the difference that she did in that fourth quarter, or that fourth set, rather, because they were struggling there defensively on that side. And Cook said, hey, we need to shut this down. Lexi, you're up. And she went in and did it. So certainly an interesting week so far for Lexi Sun. But I think that proves that even if you're not in the lineup now, there's a chance that you'll still be able to get back in there and make a difference for this team.
And good for her and you're absolutely right, when she came in the fourth set and sparked the blocking. And Nebraska, once they got to the fourth set, everything started to click and they win in four. But it was good to see that when you have an All-American that's not in the starting lineup to begin conference play, is sitting on the bench, that when she's called upon, she's dialed in and she's ready to go and she's able to help you. So new lineup last night, kind of the lineup that they worked through, almost treated like the first couple of weeks of a get-to-know-you type of situation. Settled on the lineup. What did you think of what he rolled out there last night?
It's so hard to know at this point, just based on how up and down everybody's been. I really don't know what the best lineup is. Obviously, last night it worked, but it was also Northwestern, and I don't think that was the first time they lost a set to Northwestern since 2013. So I don't necessarily think, though the losing streak is over, that this means that they're back. They're back to where they were. They got everything figured out. They're still working through some things, but it was good to see the Kubik and Lindsey Krause in particular play the way that they did on Wednesday night. Looked like the high school Lindsey that I had watched for a couple of years. She was swinging hard. She was being aggressive. She was going up there and did 15 kills on 500 hitting. So that's a bit more successful than what she's done so far for most of the season. So I think that was big for her to get a little bit of confidence to show, hey, actually, I'm still pretty good at this. And then Kubik. She was a little up and down. That's kind of how she's been. But she was really good in the first set, then kind of fell off a little bit, then picked it up strong and helped them finish out the match. So I think that was probably the biggest things to come out of that match, besides the win, is getting two of those three pin hitters going. Allie Batenhorst had a really good stretch in the second or third set there, but ended up still with 200 hitting. So not quite what you want, but I think it was progress for her as well, considering she had also been struggling.
How far away do you think this team is from what you believe they should be?
They're still a ways off. Again, a lot of that is the hitting, but I feel like they haven't gotten close to the defensive level that they showed against Creighton since. And Northwestern even hit 215, which is not quite up to Nebraska standard, I don't think. So they play well in one area, and then it kind of slips in another area, I guess. But yeah, they've still got a ways to go to get to where they could be, where they're contending for the Big Ten. Because you look at some of those teams up top, Wisconsin, obviously, but Ohio State's gone off to a great start this year as well. And Purdue and Minnesota are going to be tough. So they still got some ground to make up, but the good thing is, it was only game one of the Big Ten, so they've got time to make that ground up.
And home this weekend for Iowa. Jacob Padilla from Hail Varsity joining us. Let's talk a little bit about basketball. So it was picture day in Lincoln yesterday. Practice around all of college basketball begins next week. We're 47 days from college basketball. The Big East schedule comes out today. We can discuss a little bit of that if you'd like. But I want to ask you about Nebraska. I look at the roster, and it's been a pretty good offseason in terms of generating some buzz, letting people get to know these guys, and it's outside of these borders. You got national basketball people that are, I think, very intrigued about what's to come in year number three. I look at the team picture yesterday, and there's some familiar faces, not a ton, and then there's some newcomers that we've heard about for a while, and you start going, how do you think, and this will probably unfold during the roll-in of the non-conference schedule, Jacob. How do you think Fred will figure out all the minutes to distribute? Because it seems like there's a lot of guys that are going to be in the mix to get minutes.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest question. They've got a little bit more depth, and they've got some competition for spots, for sure. I think I feel pretty solid about Trey McGowan, Lonzo Verge, Bryce McGowan, Lapman, and Derek Walker probably being the starting five to open the season. But then after that, I think everything's up for grabs. You've got Eduardo Andre probably be the backup five in there, and I think those two will handle the majority of the minutes. We'll see what happens with Oleg Kozhinets. You've got guys like Keon Edwards and Trevor Lakes and Wilhelm Breidenbach between the two of them, kind of. Keon and Trevor, I think, are kind of like 3-4 tweeners, and Breidenbach is kind of more of a 4-5 type. So there's some lineup versatility there. And you've got Kobe Webster coming back, and CJ Wilshire and Keisei Tominaga as well battling for backup guard minutes. And I know they really like Wilshire, and talking to everybody yesterday about Keisei Tominaga, the just rave reviews, everybody's just kind of marveling at the way he can shoot the ball. What that can do for a team. So there's definitely going to be some tough calls. I think they're going to have a lot more shooting if all of this translates this year, which should open things up a little bit more. Last year, it just wasn't there consistently enough, I think, for the offense to ever truly click. And this year, I think they've got more pieces to play the way that Fred Hoiberg wants to play and be successful. They still got to go out and prove that, because obviously last year there's a lot of the same guys and it didn't quite work out. So see if kind of this second year together with some talented upgrades will be enough to get them over the hump and into a place where they can compete in the Big Ten.
You think he knows his starting five yet?
Yeah, I think it's probably... I'm sure he's giving everybody a chance to show, but I think that's probably the five that I mentioned. You got the two veterans coming back in the front court. Bryce is coming in to start from day one, and I think they like Lonzo Verge. He's really showing off that he's not quite the player that he has been at Arizona State. I think they really like the way that he's distributing the ball. and making plays for others. And I think he was more known for his scoring at Arizona State. Obviously, he had that huge 40-point game or whatever it was his first year there. But it seems like he's really focused on setting guys up, and he's a pretty creative passer, I think. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of how that Trey McGowan verge backcourt kind of works out. I think both guys have had some similar weaknesses in the past, but they like Trey McGowan said he really likes playing with Alonzo. Says they're a lot alike personality wise, in addition to kind of what they can do on the court. So that's the guy that they went out and wanted to kind of fill that roster spot. And so I think that's kind of the first five that we're going to see.
And normally on Friday nights in the wintertime, you're in a high school gymnasium. You will probably have to find a way to balance both. December 17th is the Big East opener, and it's Creighton and Villanova. And before, when you wake up on January 6th, Creighton and Villanova will already be done because Creighton will go to Philadelphia on January 5th. The first part of the schedule, especially a stretch late in January for about four games, looks, I mean, that's going to be, I think, a kind of a crucial part. But as you've looked at this schedule real quickly, and you know the personnel, it's going to be a young team that with some good talent, but they need to play at this level. How do you look at this schedule, how it will be managed?
Yeah, the Villanova thing is the first thing that jumped out to me just twice in the first five games. It's kind of weird. And then you turn around right after that, and you've got Xavier twice in another five-game span in about the course of 2 weeks. So those are probably going to be two of the tougher teams in the league, and you've got them within your first 12 or so games, or first 11 games. So that was that's kind of struck me as odd that they're kind of loading up those games early in the season. A lot of the others are kind of spread out between first and second meetings. So that's probably not what you want facing the toughest teams in the first half of the season, considering Creighton looks like a team that is hoping to be able to get better and better as the season goes on, but might go through some kind of growing pains early on, especially in the league season. They'll have the non-conference this year to kind of work through some of that stuff. But outside of a few games, they're not going to be tested at the same degree that they will be once they get in the Big East play. So it's probably not exactly what you want, but at the end of the day, you're going to have to play all these teams twice. So it doesn't really matter that much where they fall on the calendar.
Jacob Dill from Hale Varsity joining us. Let's talk about football. And before we talk about Michigan State and your thoughts on that, Oklahoma, it's September. So fans and media, we all have the same issue. We tend to overreact to a single game, both good and bad. What do you think is an overreaction to what you saw on Saturday, and what do you think is a real reaction to what you saw on Saturday?
That's a good one. overreaction.
I could give you a synopsis of 2.5 hours after the game.
Yeah, that's... trying to think here that just through all everything that I've heard about the game, I guess one, I think we have to be careful of over, like you said, kind of the, I think you're kind of spot on there to a certain degree. I think they definitely improved since week one, but all the reasons that they were able to lose that or I guess week zero, that game to Illinois, we're still present in the Oklahoma game. They just played a little bit better in some other areas. And so I think that they're not consistent enough to know exactly what we're going to get out of them from week to week. They're capable. I think that game showed that they've got good enough players and good enough schemes to compete with teams. But it also shows that, again, that they're still not executing at a good enough rate to kind of count on that happening and count on them beating anybody on their schedule at this point. So I think you feel good. I think that Eric Chenander, kind of the way he looked at it, it's like, yeah, we did some good things, but if you focus on that, kind of you can't come out and focus on that and not be ready to to try to take steps forward in this next game. It doesn't really mean anything because they still lost the game, and honestly, Oklahoma missed a few opportunities. Mm-hmm. I think that could have made things a little bit more comfortable for them. Just like Nebraska missed a few opportunities that could have made it a different game. So I think it's particularly nothing about the offense is fixed. I think we're feeling good about Adrian Martinez at this point, but ultimately, until the offensive line shows improvement, it's not going to matter too much. He's going to keep you alive, but you're not going to feel good about the offense until they find a way to be more consistent, and it starts with those guys up front.
The special teams, I think it now becomes a weekly discussion, and it's not just this year. I mean, everybody is trending about a very uneven special teams group. When one thing is bad, all of a sudden it's good. When one thing is good, all of a sudden it is bad. You may not know the answer here, but I think this could be a deep dive for somebody. What is going on in college football with place kicking and field goals? Not only is Culp 3 of 8, but opponents against Nebraska are 1 in 7. Now, Michigan State's place kicker is 2 of 5 on field goals, and their opponents are 1 of 4. What? I just kind of throw that out there. I stumbled across it last night. I mean, do we need to do a deep dive, or what's going on? Because those are like unheard of, that in Nebraska games this year, the place kickers, whether they're for Nebraska or some or the other four teams, are 4 of 15. In the Michigan State games, they are 3 of 9, whether they're wearing green or an opposing color. What's going on?
Wow, that's weird. I haven't looked to – those are two specific instances where things are really weird. I haven't looked to I don't even know the easiest way to do this, but what the national rate is. Are these isolated incidents, or is this something that's kind of popping up around the country? Obviously, some good teams have some really good kickers they can rely on at this point, but I don't know if there's some degree of the return of the fans playing into that after a year of minimal people in stadiums. Obviously, kicking is a hugely mental deal, and kind of changing circumstances could impact them as much or more than anybody else. So that could be it. I think particularly with Culp, maybe there's some of that. Maybe there's some of the injury that he had in camp that knocked him out for a few weeks. Maybe just that set his rhythm off, and kind of the loss of the reps there has still impacted him to this point. And then once you miss a few, it kind of gets in your head and kind of snowballs. So I don't know what to make of that. Obviously, I think this season compared to last year is very different, just the overall environment. So there's probably something to that, but at the same time, a lot of these guys have kicked before last year as well. So I don't think that alone can explain it.
And Matt Coughlin, who is a place kicker for Michigan State, is 75% in his career, but yet he's 2 of 5. Just a strange stat. You may be onto something about fans in the stands, either with the noise or the depth perception that you have, may be an impact on kicking. We might have to look into that. Everybody's looking into, Jacob, Nebraska's problems to score points and their inability when they drive down the field and they get into the money pit, the red zone, they aren't able to put up 7, they get 3, or they get nothing. What you're seeing through 4 games in the red zone, is it fixable in on the fly so that doesn't become an issue in another what we perceive to be a close game on Saturday night, where every time you have a chance to put points up, you have to put points up?
I don't know if it's fixable on the fly short term. I think they can definitely improve in some areas, but ultimately, like everything else on offense, if the offensive line doesn't play better, they're going to have a tough time. They've lived so far on big plays and guys breaking free and making plays down the field. A lot of their scores, they've had some very long touchdowns where they haven't needed to execute in the red zone. And red zone offense has been a problem throughout Adrian Martinez's career. And it's not always on Adrian. Sometimes it's on him. Sometimes his receivers haven't either been able to get open or come down with the ball when they have. But right now, I think part of it is that they can't really run inside the 20, just like they can't run anywhere else. But in particular, when the field gets shrunk there's not as much you can do down the field, and especially teams know that they're not going to have to worry too much about a strong running game, so they can kind of shift their coverage a little bit and make it tougher for Nebraska to run the routes that they've had success with so far. If Adrian Martinez can't stand there in the pocket long enough for guys to find the openings in the defense, if he's running for his life, it's going to be hard to have success passing the ball and trying to find guys in the end zone. So I think it all comes back to the offensive line, just like everything else. And I don't know if that's something that you can fix short term. You just got to keep hoping that these guys are going to get better and or find different guys and give them a shot to get in there and see if they can figure it out.
You've teed it up here for my final question for you, and it's discussion with Jacob Padilla. Turner Corcoran has given up 20 quarterback pressures in 4 games. That is number one in the country. I don't think we saw that. We thought we would see more of what we saw against Rutgers. It is what it is, but his counterpart on the other side at tackle isn't much better. So whether it be a shifting of where you're playing or a shifting of what person is wearing a helmet in a particular spot, look into your crystal ball, Jacob. What is the plan, you think, for Teddy Prochazka moving forward now that it's pretty certain that he will not redshirt?
Yeah, I think I was talking with Greg Smith about this on Monday. I think if you really do plan to burn a redshirt this year, then you're putting your 3 kind of like blue chip recruit tackles all in the same class, because all 3 will have freshman eligibility this season because of the weird last year redshirts and all that stuff. So you're putting the 3 guys at that position in the same class, which means you're not exactly spreading things out and not kind of maximizing those guys unless you move positions for one of those guys. So if the struggles continue, I think the plan ultimately could be to slide Corcoran inside the guard. I know a lot of people thought that could end up being his best position long-term anyway, just based on what he showed in high school and his measurables and all that stuff. So I think if Teddy continues to progress and shows them a lot to like, and if Turner continues to struggle, I don't know if that's a this season thing. They might not have a choice if it continues, or if that's something that we start to see more long-term. I know they've kind of bounced Brant Bakes around trying to find a spot for him, and he hasn't really, I don't think he's necessarily popped at any spot once he's gotten out there. So I don't know if he's a guy that is still feeling like is a long-term starter or not. But if Teddy comes in and impresses them, then that could kind of change the calculus for how they're doing that offensive line.
Where did you have on your list of concerns going into this year Connor Culp and Turner Corcoran? They had to be way, way down the list, correct?
Yeah, oh, yes, very much so. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that we were making too much out of one game, especially I don't think Rutgers' best pass rusher was playing in that game last year. But he did get a few snaps here and there as well, even before that game, to kind of get his feet wet. Then he came out and performed really well in his first start. So I don't know how much of it is the preseason injury impacting him. Kind of mentioned the same thing with Culp, missing time and then right up to the first game and then getting thrown out there and like, all right, hopefully you can kind of round into form. It's just tough to know at this point with him how much of it is rust and experience, where those things could get better. You would hope as the season goes on, but after 4 games without much improvement, does that mean that it's more capability, and that is something that isn't going to be fixed so easily? So that's, I think, the conversation that the coaches are having to have right now is like, all right, is he going to be able to pull himself out of this? Do we stick with him and give him that chance, or is there something else we need to try? And that's always a tough call for coaches, especially with young players like him, and when you don't have more experienced options, because at this point you move him, then you're going to another young guy. You're going to Banks, you're going to Teddy, and you could find yourself in the same exact situation after you make a change. And then how does that change impact Corcoran short-term and long-term? So there's a lot of factors, I think, on that offensive line they're trying to figure out right now. And the fact that we're just not seeing progress from any of them makes it all the more complicated.
As always, Jacob, I appreciate the conversation. I know you'll be busy this week. Fantastic work with the latest column and much more on HailVarsity.com. As always, enjoy your Thursday.
Yeah, thanks. Talk to you next week.
That's Jacob Padilla. Teddy Prohaska, we're past the redshirt. He's going to play. Now you've added the element of Travis Vokolek returning, so you're using two tight ends that are kind of shielding issues on your offensive line. You've got two tackles that have not lived up to their billing. They have been the problem, not the solution. You're in a situation now. You got to play your best players. And if your best player is a guy that showed up in January and you're going to throw him on to play tackle against a Big Ten team, but yet he can do the job, you don't look back. You don't look back, and I think we'll see more. We played, what, five plays against Oklahoma, but he played as a blocking tight end? Serviceable. I mean, he just needs to play some football. But if he can help you at left tackle, even for a series here or there, but enough that it makes it worth burning somebody's red shirt and building him up, I think you got to do it. And I think Saturday night is the place to do it. Now, whoever is going to play tackle and whoever's going to look across, they're going to see Drew Beasley, and he is one of the best edge rushers in the Big Ten. But you've added the element of we're okay using two tight ends to help with that offensive line before they get their feet on the ground. You got to find any way. Doesn't matter how it looks. Just the only place that it matters how it looks is up on the scoreboard. All right, 11:34, mailbag coming up at noon. Your chance to win a gift card from Oscar's Pizza and Grill. We've got fantasy football. Joe Bartles coming up from RotoWire at 1. And Bobby Witt Jr. from the Omaha Storm Chasers will stop by at 1:30 on the Gary Sharp Show with Chance on 1620 The Zone. Week 3 is here. Tonight it starts. You've got the Panthers and the Texans, and it'll finish with the biggest game of Week 3. It is a division matchup between Philadelphia and Dallas. The Cowboys are 3.5-point favorites, and FanDuel Sportsbook is about to make it even bigger. FanDuel is giving new customers 30-to-1 odds on either team to win. Do you have faith in Jalen Hurts that he puts together a nice game against that Cowboy defense that has outperformed its talent so far? Or will the Cowboys benefit from playing at home? You could end the NFL week right by winning $150 on a $5 bet. Check out the Cowboys and the Eagles. What kind of faith do you have in the Eagles? You know, they failed to capitalize on a number of opportunities last week against the Niners. They had a field goal block. They came away with no points in another possession that stalled at the Niners won. Using that logic, this could be a good night for Jalen Hurts. Could be a good night for the Eagles defense. Or it could be another big night for Dak Prescott. Put together a same-game parlay. You can do that right through America's number one rated sportsbook app. That is FanDuel. Sports betting made simple, and they're always hooking you up with great offers like this one. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid in as little as 24 hours. So see for yourself why FanDuel is number one in America. Just sign up with promo code GARY162 before Dallas takes on Philadelphia Monday night. You could win $150 on a $5 bet. Remember to use promo code GARY162 so they know I sent you, exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. 21 over, present Iowa. New users only. $10 first deposit required. Must wager in designated offer market. Maximum bonus, $150. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-BETS-OFF.